Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. It's my pleasure to be able to hang out with you and spend a little time with you and share some ideas and introduce you to some really smart people. Like our guest this half hour, Conrad Winkler. He's vice president with Booz Allen Hamilton. At least that's the name. That's what they used to be called. They have a new name. I'm going to get Conrad to help us with that in just a minute. He's based out of Chicago. He's one of their manufacturing experts. He helps manufacturers with their strategy, with their supply chains, making sure that they're 21st century manufacturers. That's a big deal. And he is a co-author of a book, Make or Break, How Manufacturers Can Leap from Decline to Revitalization. And he's our new friend, Conrad Winkler. Welcome back.
Good morning. How are you, Jim?
Doing good. It's good to have you back. Good to have you on the show. And, folks, we've had a number of other folks from Conrad's organization. Art Kleiner was on recently. Christopher Vollmer has also been with us before, talking about important things that are going on in the marketplace. Conrad, this manufacturing thing is a lot of people think it's a pretty simple explanation. You know, we basically just let our jobs go overseas. We had NAFTA, and NAFTA sucked all the especially the textile jobs out of the United States, and we've basically, you know, dropped our barriers, and because of globalization and everything, we've let all of our jobs go to China. Some of that is true, but a lot of it is not. But the whole story is not really that simple, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, when you look at it, when you look at how many jobs, how many companies are actually coming into the United States to manufacture, for example, while we do layoffs that we say are because of China or Mexico, it's actually quite striking. When you look at, for example, all the plants, Toyota's, I think, building another one, so they'll have 8 major assembly plants in the United States and Canada.
Right.
And at the same time, of course, we're having to close down the American manufacturers are shutting down plants like, mm-hmm. like there's no tomorrow. And then also, I mean, textiles, for example, are mostly lost to the low-cost countries in Asia. That certainly is true.
One of the things I'd like to point out about that, Conrad, is what happened in the 90s and part of this decade was what I call the third NAFTA. It wasn't the first NAFTA, it was the third NAFTA. The first NAFTA was when those jobs came from England to the United States. The second NAFTA was when they went from New England to the South in the first half of the 20th century. And so England didn't like it when they lost those jobs, but they lost them to lower wage earners. New England didn't like it when they lost those jobs to the South, and that actually gave rise to the minimum wage that we have in the United States. And so when the jobs went from the South to Mexico, that was actually the third NAFTA. And Conrad, as you know, there now has been a fourth NAFTA, right? Because right. Those jobs aren't in Mexico anymore.
That's right. I mean, and it's always interesting to think about, you know, jobs don't always just pick up and leave, but it's always a part of the picture, right? It's clearly a major issue when we lose jobs. But in a country that's got, you know, something around a 5% unemployment rate, mm-hmm. and if you go into a major manufacturer in the Midwest and say, boy, what I really need is I need some highly skilled electrical maintenance guys, or what I really need right now is the best welding engineer in the world. And what you'd find is you can't find those guys.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like, sure, there are cases of towns, especially in the Midwest, smaller towns that have lost major factories, where there are a lot of very skilled people who are really hurting.
Yep.
On the other hand, there's a lot of situations in which companies are trying like crazy to get really great people, and they can't get them. So this isn't a country that's in a state of of 15% unemployment, where you can just pick up the most skilled person right off the street anytime you want.
The reason I wanted to point out about the NAFTAs, Conrad, is in this political season, we have politicians who want to go, who want to rescind NAFTA, and they make people believe that they're going to bring those jobs back. You know, and or at least they talk about it as if to let people make that determination that, you know, oh, if we rescind NAFTA, that means everything reverses. Well, folks, as I said a minute ago, you can't. I've actually had people say, we need to rescind NAFTA and go down to Mexico and get those jobs and bring them back. And I can only tell so many people, because I only have, you know, my voice only goes out so far, and I tell them, I say, look, you can go down there and look for those jobs, but you're not going to find them because they're not there anymore. And this, which brings me to a point of another thing that's is kind of mythical, and that is that all jobs are only leaving the United States. Manufacturing jobs is only leaving the United States. Conrad, and you know this, because in fact, your company may have done the report on this, I'm not sure. When I speak around the country, I ask audiences, which country has lost more manufacturing jobs than any other country in the world? And everybody always says America.
Right,
and they're surprised when I tell them that it's China.
That's right. That's right. China's losing jobs. And in the United States, our biggest loss of jobs is actually to improvements of technology. It's not actually to jobs moving to other places.
Which is why the greater number of jobs have been lost in China. That's exactly the reason China's lost the jobs.
But it is interesting to note. I mean, at the same time, a couple of thoughts on the Jim. I mean, it is undeniable that there, overall, despite the losses in China, that there are huge gains in manufacturing jobs.
Exactly.
And those people getting those jobs are getting much, much richer than they were before, and they are part of creating a world economy that we're all going to benefit from in the long run.
It's a middle class that's about to bloom over there. The Chinese middle class is the size of the U.S. population.
And will
300 million.
And will grow from there. But you know, there are a lot of jobs. You know, Jim, there are a lot of jobs in Mexico, though. There are a lot of U.S. Automotive assembly plants.
Mm-hmm.
There's even quite a bit of food processing going on there, and so the electronics industry went to Mexico, and then it basically left and went to China and to other parts of Asia. But there is quite a bit of manufacturing there. But you know what?
Hold on to that thought, Conrad. Folks, when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the things that are happening in the United States to resurrect and revitalize manufacturing in the United States. And you might not be surprised to find out a lot of it is small business manufacturing. 20 after, right back with Conrad Winkler. Stay with me. Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. My websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. Check them out, using to your advantage. No barriers to entry. We're visiting with our new friend Conrad Winkler. He's with, well, you know, folks, for 100 years, okay, maybe not quite that long, I've called them Booz Allen Hamilton. But Conrad, you have a new name, don't you?
Yeah, it's 94 years of the firm being in business, and we've changed from Booz Allen Hamilton to Booz and Company.
All right.
And so basically,
Mr. Hamilton weren't too happy about that either, were they?
No, they're unhappy about it, but they're not around anymore. But we're thankful anyway. Now we've decided to split the part of our business that serves the U.S. government with the part of our business that serves the commercial world. And Booz and Company is the part that serves commercial businesses.
All right. Well, that's the group we like the most. So Booz and Company, folks, is the new organization. And the book is called Make or Break. Kaj Grunschnick and Conrad Winkler are co-authors, along with Jeffrey Rothfetter. And tell us where the book's available, Conrad.
So it's available, of course, everywhere, you know, in terms of Borders and Barnes and Noble, but it's also and Amazon, but it's also available at www.businessfuture.com.
Okay, that sounds good. Businessfuture.com. Conrad, one of the things that I've noticed in the last few years is a resurgence of small business manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
What have you seen?
Yeah, I've seen the same thing, and it's in some
ways. I'm talking about startup.
Absolutely.
Startups.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that's happened is, and we talk about this in our book, is that people really want a lot of variety. They want the latest cool stuff, and they want it the way they want it. And when you think about who best can do this, is this the kind of thing that comes off huge 3,000-person plant assembly lines, or are these the kind of things that come from smaller manufacturers that can come up with ways to really customize it to their local customer? And the answer is that often the smaller manufacturers are just as good at having a very flexible process to make exactly what that customer needs exactly when they want it.
Well, that's exactly right. The years ago, the Small Business Person of the Year, maybe 3 years ago, the Small Business Person of the Year owns a foundry. He and a couple of guys owned a foundry. Now, they worked in that foundry in the 80s and the 90s, and the foundry foundered, basically. It was about to go out of business because the owner was a 20th century guy. He didn't really understand. He was older. He was ready to retire. He didn't really want to take the business into the 21st century because he didn't really know how. He was a 20th century foundry guy. And so this other guy I was talking about and a couple of partners bought the company in the late 90s and over 4 or 5 or 6 years turned it into a 21st century foundry, making specialty parts like you were talking about, to the point where he became the small business person of the country.
Now, we're seeing this all the time, that companies are figuring out, whether they're small or large, they're really figuring out ways to compete in the 21st century. They're figuring out how to have process technology that's better. They're figuring out how to run a lot more efficiently. They're figuring out how to handle a large variety of parts extremely efficiently that someone who needs 12 weeks on the ocean to get it over can't really mm-hmm. compete with. And these guys are finding a way to really win. And on the other hand, we're also seeing a great deal of companies not figure out how to win, and they're losing, and they're closing, or they're losing money.
The ones I'm gonna make a statement. You tell me if I'm wrong here, Conrad. The ones who can't make it, who aren't making it, who aren't surviving, are the ones who can't, who don't want to be 21st century participants. They still are holding on to the last vestiges of the 20th century in their processes. What do you think?
No, I think that's true. Of course, you know, at the end of the day, as we know, that, you know, there are certain economics you can't overcome, right? If you're doing cutting and sewing of clothing, for example, without a lot of automated equipment, it's pretty tough to, not impossible, but it's pretty tough to compete in this country when
right.
when others are doing it at 30, 40 cents an hour in Vietnam. But that's not most things. That's just some things. But mm-hmm. in most things, if you can figure out a way, both from a product side, but also in how you run your operations, to get the customer what they want in the speed that they want it in, and with the variety that they want and ways to give them advantages, then you win. You know, the other small business side of this that I think people often ignore is the small businesses that are doing a lot of the services for major manufacturers as well. They play a major role in how successful those companies will be. Those who figure out, how do I lay out these lines? How do I install, great manufacturing technology, whether it's injection molding presses or whether it's stamping or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
And when they figure out ways to do things better, they, of course, make themselves better and do extremely well, but they also enable those larger companies to be successful too.
Right. Absolutely. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. Conrad Winkler is our guest. He's with Booz and Company. The book is called Make or Break, How Manufacturers Can Leap from Decline to Revitalization. He's going to stay with us one more segment. Then Joel Labov is going to be with us. We're going to talk about franchising later in the hour. But Conrad's going to stay with us. One more segment. We're going to talk about this just a little bit more. When we come back, I want to talk about vertical integration for small business owners in the manufacturing world. Stay with us.
You're listening to a man whose work is never done.
In a job like yours, even when it's finished, there's always one more thing to do.
And his job is to make your job easier.
It's a very difficult job, and the only way to get through it is we all work together as a team. And that means you do everything I say.
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, and I'm glad you're here. You just tuned in. Welcome aboard. We're visiting with Conrad Winkler. He's the co-author of Make or Break, How Manufacturers Can Leap from Decline to Revitalization. Conrad, I met a lady about 4 or 5 years ago, a lady who had never been in the foundry business in her life. And she had an opportunity to buy a foundry. And she literally didn't know anything about the foundry business, which was bad in one way, but it was the way it was good was she didn't have any baggage. She didn't know that she wasn't supposed to try certain things. She was in Iowa, I think it was, and the foundry, you know, she just hated the idea of the foundry losing all those jobs when it went under. So she bought it and started looking for 21st century opportunities and turned it around, and is now operating.
But it's interesting you say that because, you know, we've studied a lot of manufacturing organizations, and one of the biggest problems is that when the head of the operations or the head of the business has made big mistakes, it's often hard for them to admit those mistakes.
Yep, yep.
And then take the next steps. And once you're caught in a situation where you have to spend your time justifying what you did in the past instead of thinking about what you're going to do in the future, you're really in trouble.
Well, what she did was she went to the people who were her prospects, and she asked them these simple questions: what do you need? When do you need it? How do you need it? Do you want it upside down, laying on the side, delivered backwards? Do I need to paint my trucks brown? What do I need to do? And they told her. She started doing those things, and they started giving her business. She wasn't just dropping things off on the dock for her customers. She became vertically integrated with their process.
That's right. And if you look at even companies like Toyota in San Antonio, where they've got a large pickup truck plant now, there are probably 30 or 40 small businesses that supply a great deal of the material and actually put the material in the way that Toyota wants it.
Mm-hmm.
And those companies are really thriving. They're figuring out exactly the way that Toyota wants it.
They're not just vendors, they're vertically integrated partners.
That's right. It's quite an opportunity to add value. The last thing a lot of these large companies want to do is to handle sorting their fasteners and to figure out how things need, you know, small parts need to go to the mm-hmm. line or to have to engineer how each container looks. They want their partners to do as much of that as they can.
Yeah. Well, you got any more cool stories, especially for small businesses in manufacturing?
Well, some of the I think some of the most interesting ones are also how to serve retailers, for example. These retailers really often, I mean, they're the ones who, on the operations side, often struggle the most. But if you look at everything from the manufacturers who are able to not only make the parts, say, in one example, there's a lamp company in Chicago. I've forgotten the name of it. And they make a great deal of their own lamps, but they also import a lot from Asia and China. But what they're able to do is they not only they tell the retailers what to stock, but they also study it in a way that they can really convince the retailers that this is what's really going to sell, this is what's not going to sell, and they're real partners in that. And so as a result, they've taken some of the major retailers like Macy's and others in the mm-hmm. Chicago area and helped them really increase sales of those products, and now they've become indispensable.
This is happening all over the place, folks, where vendors are literally becoming part of the teams, aren't they? They're actually sitting in meetings. and becoming part of the teams. And it's these and when I say vendors, I'm not talking about suppliers, only suppliers. And we're talking about manufacturers as well.
That's right. It really is both. And again, you know, assortment and variety is really valued, but it's very difficult for the end retailer or the end manufacturer to get all that stuff figured out, and they really value it when someone does figure it out.
Isn't the key to small business manufacturing in the United States finding your niche and sticking with that niche, being the best at it?
It is, but then also realizing when your niche is threatened and figuring out the, you know, figuring out the nuances as you go.
Right.
You know, I think it's really important as a small business or as any business to really know when it is that you've got to look for something different or some
right.
way to add value.
I say it's okay to fall in love with what you do, but you can't fall in love with how you do it. Conrad Winkler, thank you for being here. Good job today, as always.
We'll see you
next time. Make or Break is the book. Stay with us. Quick break. Right back after these messages.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.